May I have a Krishna book, please? Can you look up Akrura's prayers?
Akrura. Akrura's prayers.
You look it up in the table of contents. Here it is. 40. Got it?
Yes.
Thank you. Prayers by Akrura. Hare Krishna. My deepest condolences. Hare Krishna. Prayers by Akrura. Akrura offered his prayers as follows. This is chapter 39 in the Krishna book by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You don't have a Krishna book on your stand, but soon we'll have an iPad on every stand. Akrura offered his prayers as follows. My dear Lord, is this too much? It sounds it's just a little up. Okay. Something's up. Akrura offered his prayers as follows. My dear Lord, I here pay my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the supreme cause of all causes and the original inexhaustible personality, Narayan. From your navel, a lotus flower grows, and from that lotus, Brahma, the creator of this universe, is born. Since Brahma is the cause of this universe, you are the cause of all causes. All the elements of this cosmic manifestation, earth, water, fire, ether, ego, and the total material energy, as well as nature, the material energy, the living entities, mind, senses, the sense objects, and the demigods who control the affairs of the cosmos, are all produced from your body. Where does it say that in the Brahma Samhita? All the elements of this cosmic, the question is, where does it say the following in the Brahma Samhita? All the elements of this cosmic manifestation, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and ego, and the total material energy, as well as nature, the material energy, the living entities, mind, senses, the sense objects, and the demigods who control the affairs of the cosmos, are all produced from your body. Agnir mahi ganganamam mamburu dishascha kalas tatatma manasiti jagatriyani. Can you look it up? Yes, mad bhavanti vivavanti vishanti yamcha govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. I think we'll need the book. You are the supersoul of everything, but no one knows your transcendental form. Everyone within this material world is influenced by the modes of material nature. Demigods like Lord Brahma, being covered by the influence of material nature, do not exactly know your transcendental existence beyond this cosmic manifestation of the three modes of material nature. Great sages and mystics worship you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of all living entities, the cosmic manifestation in all demigods. They worship you as all-inclusive. Some of the learned Brahmins also worship you by observing the ritualistic ceremony of the Rig Veda. They offer different kinds of sacrifices in the names of different gods. And there are others also who are fond of worshiping transcendental knowledge. They are very peaceful and wish to give up all kinds of material activities. They engage themselves in the philosophical search for you, known as Gyan Yoga. Agnir Mahi Ganganamam Mumuru Dishascha. 31. 51. Could you read it?
Sri Brahma Samhita, verse 51. Agnir Mahi Gaganamambu Marudhisascha Kalas Tathatma Manasiti Jagatrayani Yasmad Bhavanti Vibhavanti Visanti Yamcha Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Translation.
The three worlds are composed of the nine elements, namely fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm.
Purport.
There is nothing in the three worlds. There is nothing in the three worlds save the five elements, 10 quarters, time, jiva soul, and the mental principle, allied with the subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, and ego of conditioned souls. The elevationists, karmis, make their offerings in sacrifice in the fire. Conditioned souls know nothing beyond the perceivable world of nine elements. The jiva is the self-same soul whose ecstatic delight the joyless liberationists, jnanis, aspire after. Both the principles that are respectively depicted as Atma and Prakriti by the system of Sankhya are included in the above. In other words, all the principles that have been enunciated by all the speculative philosophers, Tattvavadis, are included in these nine elements. Sri Govinda is the source of the appearance, continuance, and the subsidence of all these principles.
Where does it say similar things in the Bhagavad Gita? Where does it name all the elements in the Bhagavad
Gita? Bhumirapo nalo vayu kamuno buddhirevacha ahankara
itiyamme
bhinna prakriti rashtada.
Translation.
The earth, water, air, fire, and ether.
Mind, intelligence,
falsika. These are all my separated material energies.
Where else does it say it? Where else does Krishna catalog all of the material elements before he names how to see the difference between the material elements and the self? And the super self. That's a dead giveaway, the way I just put it anyway. What chapter does he make a major distinction between the material elements and the spirit self and the super self? Where does he enumerate the process of knowledge in 20 stages?
Nature and the enjoyer and the consciousness.
Which chapter is that?
That's
chapter 13. And so just before he tells about the process of knowledge, he talks about all the whole Mahatattva. Mm. So this is a similar verse. There are many verses, as we named from the Brahma Samhita. And now we're going to look at chapter 13. And in chapter 13, Krishna says, just before you get to verse number 8 through 13, 6 through 7, I'll say please repeat. This is on page 570 in your Bhagavad Gita. 13, 6 through 7. Mahabhutani hankaro.
Mahabhutani hankaro.
Bhudhir avyakta mevacha. Indriyani daishaikam cha. panchachendriya gocharaha. Icha dvesha sukham tukam. Sanghatas chetanadritihi. Etad kshetram samasena. Savikaram udahritam. Translation. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the ten senses and the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. Now I'm going to read the paragraph again. So now you have at least three reference points for what's for one of the statements that's mentioned in the first paragraph of Prayers by Akura, and I'm going to read the first paragraph again. Is that all right? Ready? Akura offered his prayers as follows. My dear Lord, I here pay my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the supreme cause of all causes and the original inexhaustible personality, Narayan. And we're going to come back to that statement and back it up in a minute. From your navel, a lotus flower grows, and from that lotus, Brahma, the creator of this universe, is born. Since Brahma is the cause of this universe, you are the cause of all causes. All the elements of this cosmic manifestation, earth, water, fire, air, ether, ego, and the total material energy, as well as nature, the marginal energy, the living entities, mind, senses, the sense objects, and the demigods who control the affairs of the cosmos, are all produced from your body. You are the supersoul of everything, but no one knows your transcendental form. Everyone within this material world is influenced by the modes of material nature. I hope you're thinking of verses while I'm saying these sentences. Demigods like Lord Brahma, being covered by the influence of material nature, do not exactly know your transcendental existence beyond the cosmic manifestation of the three modes of material nature. Great sages and mystics worship you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of all living entities, all cosmic manifestation, and the demigods. They worship you as all-inclusive. Some of the learned Brahmins also worship you by observing the ritualistic ceremony of the Rig Veda. They offer different kinds of sacrifices in the names of different gods. And there are also others also who are fond of worshiping transcendental knowledge. They are very peaceful and wish to give up all kinds of material activities. They engage themselves in philosophical search for you, known as Jnana Yoga. Okay, are you ready? Akura offered his prayers as follows, from the top. My dear Lord, I here pay my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the supreme cause of all causes. Okay, we have one entry, and that is Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante imam buddha bhava samanvita. That's from the Bhagavad Gita 10.8. And it says, we better give her a microphone because I think she's an active participant. She's a live wire back there.
So Lord Krishna says that I am the origin of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava matta sarvam pravartate. Everything originates from me. And iti matva bhajante mam. Knowing this, the learned people worship me with all their intelligence. Knowing this, the intelligent people worship me by
with all their hearts.
With all their hearts and putting all their attention.
And do you know that? That Krishna is the origin of everything?
Yes, Prabhuji.
And do you worship him with all your heart?
I try to.
Do you think of him every day and think how he's the origin of everything that you see?
Yes, I do.
Nice.
Yes.
So you can live in that verse. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. There is nothing beyond Krishna, and there's no reason to think of anything or anyone beyond Krishna. There's only two rules in all the Vedic literatures. There are millions of rules, but they boil down to two rules, of which all the other rules are servants, smartav yasa tatam vishnur vismartav yona jatu chit. Sarve vidhina shedha sur etur eva kinkara. Kinkara means servant. So imagine just now all these little servants, millions of them, and each one of them represents one of the rules and regulations in the Vedas, and they're all bowing down and serving two big rules, and those are always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He's the origin of everything in the whole material world, the cause of all causes. So we had one verse, and now what's another verse that says Krishna is the cause of all causes?
Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. This is from Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, verse 1.
And what does it say?
It says, Krishna, Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the origin of all. He is the cause of all causes, and he has no other origin.
This is groundbreaking knowledge and information, isn't it? We even know his name. The name is Govinda. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme cause of all causes. Okay, another one that says Krishna is the cause of all causes.
Aham adir hi devanam devarshinam cha sarvasah.
We got some hot bhakti shastri students in here on a roll. Go ahead.
That is from Bhagavad Gita. That is part of the verse. It's not the full verse. But where Krishna is saying that he is the origin of all the devas and also all the great sages also.
Okay, for full credit, give us the verse number, please. So, the first statement, while he's looking for that, Akura offered his prayers as follows. My dear Lord, I here pay my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the supreme cause of all causes and the original inexhaustible personality, Narayan.
I didn't look it up, but I remembered the first part.
Okay.
Name viduhu suraganaha, I think, pravadanti na something like that.
Go ahead, go back. Another verse that says Krishna is the supreme cause of all causes.
I have another one.
Malini, you want a shot? We already have Ishvara Sarva, Ishvara Parama Krishna. We have Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Very good. Give her the microphone. And tell us a little bit about why this verse is so important to Gaudiya Vaishnavism.
Ete chamsa kalapum sam krishnastu bhagavan svayam indrari vyakulam lokam hridayanti yuge yuge. It says, the translation says, all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But the Lord, Sri Krishna, is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheist. The Lord incarnates to protect the theist.
And give the verse number, please.
It is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, third chapter, verse number 28.
Okay. Can we hear the purport for that? Can you please grab that first canto? Kita Priya, do you want to hear the purport to this? You're being honest. You don't want to hear it, right? Truthfulness. Okay, you found yours? Where is it?
This is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, The Opulence of the Absolute, verse number 2.
Okay, read it again with the translation.
Name viduhu suraganaha prabhavamna maharsheha aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvasaha. Neither the host of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages.
Okay, now I'm reading the verse Malini put out. I'm going to read the purport. And when she comes back, then she'll give a full commentary on why it's such an important verse. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 3. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And this is text number 28. 1328. Ete chamshakala pumsa. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge Yuge Ete All these. Cha and Anksha, plenary portions. Kala, portions of the plenary portions. Pumsaha, of the Supreme. Krishnaha, Lord Krishna. Tu, but. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Swayam, in person. Indraari, the enemies of Indra. Vyakulam, disturbed. Lokam, all the planets. Mridyanti, gives protection. Yuge yuge, in different ages. Translation: all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord, but Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets. Whenever there is a disturbance created by the atheists, the Lord incarnates to protect the theists. Hare Krishna. Purport: in this particular stanza, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is distinguished from other incarnations. He is counted amongst the avatars, incarnations, because out of his causeless mercy, the Lord descends from his transcendental abode. Avatar means one who descends. What does avatar mean? All the incarnations of the Lord, including the Lord himself, descend on different planets of the material world, as also in different species of life to fulfill particular missions. Sometimes he comes himself, and sometimes his different plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions or his different differentiated portions, directly or indirectly empowered by him, descend on this material world to execute certain specific functions. Where's a verse that specifically says that the Lord appears in all different species of life? And I'll give you a clue. You know this verse, Malini. Nope, that's not it. Nope. What other ones do you know all the way through? That's why I know you know it. You got to get to 34, right? It's the last verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. You know that verse? Do you have the 34, everyone? You got to get the 34. I don't think it's in your shloka book. I'm holding all the cards here. I'll read you the first part, and then maybe you'll remember it. Here, I have it here. Yeah. Bhavayat yesha sattvena lokanvai lokabhavanaha lilava taranurato deva tiryan naradishu. Thus the Lord of the universe maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the modes of pure goodness. So this verse, Hare Krishna, is number 1234. And we're back to where we were. Sometimes he comes himself, and sometimes his different plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions or his differentiated portions, directly or indirectly empowered by him, descend on this material world to execute certain specific functions. Like who descended to perform certain specific functions? Which incarnations? The Shringadev? What did he come for? To protect Prahlad? Okay. What other incarnations are there who came with specific purposes?
He came as Purushram to take care of the Kshatriyas.
Yes. How about Prithu? What did he come for? What kind of incarnation is Prithu? Maharaj. It's a Shakti Vesh, but what kind of a Vesh is he? He shows the administrative power of the Lord. He becomes this perfect administrator, king. Anyone else?
Matsya avatar.
What about Matsya?
He came as a fish to rescue Vedas.
Nice. Originally, the Lord is full of all opulences, all prowess, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge and renunciation. Verse? The Lord is full of all opulences. You try to find it in your shloka book then. It's a verse that just defines Bhagavan as being full of all opulences. When they are partly manifested through the plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions, it should be noted that certain manifestations of his different powers are required for those particular functions. When in the room small electric bulbs are displayed, it does not mean that the electric powerhouse is limited by the small bulbs. The same powerhouse can supply power to operate large-scale industrial dynamos with greater volts. Similarly, the incarnations of the Lord display limited powers because so much power is needed at that particular time. For example, Lord Parashuram and Lord Nrisimha displayed unusual opulence by killing the disobedient Kshatriyas 21 times and killing the greatly powerful atheist Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that even the demigods and other planets would tremble simply by the unfavorable raising of his eyebrow. The demigods in the higher level of material existence many, many times excel the most well-to-do human beings in duration of life, beauty, wealth, paraphernalia, and in all other respects. Still, they were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Thus, we can simply imagine how powerful Hiranyakashipu was in this material world. But even Hiranyakashipu was cut into small pieces by the nails of Lord Nrisimha. This means that anyone materially powerful cannot stand the strength of the Lord's nails. Similarly, Jamadagnya displayed the Lord's power to kill all the disobedient kings powerfully situated in their respective states. The Lord's empowered incarnation Narada and plenary incarnation Varaha, as well as indirectly empowered Lord Buddha, created faith in the mass of people. The incarnations of Rama and Dhanvantari displayed his fame, and Balaram, Mohini, and Vamana exhibited his beauty. Dattatreya, Matsya, Kurma, and Kapila exhibited his transcendental knowledge. Nara and Narayan Rishis exhibited his renunciation. So all different incarnations of the Lord indirectly or directly manifested different features, but Lord Krishna, the primeval Lord, exhibited the complete features of Godhead. And thus it is confirmed that he is the source of all other incarnations. Why is it confirmed that Krishna is the source of all other incarnations?
All the features of other incarnations.
Can you use the microphone?
All the features in the different reincarnations are in Krishna.
Okay. So there's a secret in Vrindavan. When you're going around Govardhan Hill, there's a kund named Apsara Kund. And there Krishna used to play with his cowherd boyfriends. And he would show them all of his different incarnations just for a laugh. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha. And all the cowherd boys would take great pleasure in seeing these incarnations. So all of these different incarnations are already there within the body of Krishna. Everything emanates from him. That verse is a definition of Bhagavan. And it names six attributes of Bhagavan that he has in full. Hare Krishna. And the most extraordinary feature exhibited by Lord Sri Krishna was his internal energetic manifestation of his pastimes with the cowherd girls. His pastimes with the gopis are all displays of transcendental existence, bliss, and knowledge, although these are manifested apparently as sex love. The specific attraction of his pastimes with the gopis should never be misunderstood. The Bhagavatam relates these transcendental pastimes in the 10th canto. And in order to reach the position to understand the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, the Bhagavatam promotes the student gradually in 9 other cantos. Just a quick announcement. Everyone, please leave your phones on. Take them off, vibrate, and put them on so that they'll ring when they go off, because tonight we're distributing a book for every phone that goes off, and it's £5. So we urge everyone to please leave them on, and when new people come in, don't tell them. According to Srila Jiva Goswami's statement, in accordance with authoritative sources, Lord Sri Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. It is not that Lord Krishna has any source of incarnation. All the symptoms of the Supreme Truth in full are present in the person of Lord Sri Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord emphatically declares that there is no truth greater than or equal to himself. Where does he say that? Krishna himself declares that there's no truth greater than himself. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says this. In which chapter? Which verse? 7th chapter. Matak parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutri manigana iva. In this stanza, the word swayam is particularly mentioned to confirm that Lord Krishna has no other source than himself. Although in other places the incarnations are described as Bhagavan because of their specific functions, nowhere are they declared to be the Supreme Personality. In this stanza, the word swayam signifies the supremacy of the summum bonum. The summum bonum, could you please look up summum bonum in the dictionary? The summum bonum, Krishna, is one without a second. He himself has expanded himself in various parts, portions, and particles as Swayam Rupa, Swayam Prakash, Tadi Katma, Prabhav, Vaibhav, Vilas, Avatar, Avesh, and Jivas. All provided with innumerable energies just suitable to the respective persons and personalities. Learned scholars and transcendental subjects have carefully analyzed the summum bonum, Krishna, to have 64 principal attributes. All the expansions. Can you grab a nectar devotion, please? And look up the 64 qualities of Krishna. Did you find it? Okay, we'll give 25 points for Malini for sticking it out, and she found the verse. Give her the microphone. Tell us, first of all, what the verse is, describe it, and then say why it's important, and then read the verse.
The verse is from Vishnu Puran 6547. And this verse is about how Krishna is full of the six opulences.
Okay, and for those who are keeping score at home, what is the page number in Prabhupada's
book? Page number is 383 in Shloka book.
Page 383 in the Srila Prabhupada Shloka book. If you don't have a Prabhupada Shloka book at home, please contact us. You can order one through us. So you have all your materials at home. You can also download some of the other books that we have. Okay, now to say why it's important, and then...
This is important because we see beauty, wealth, fame, and everything in others also in this material world, but nobody can possess in full, all the six opulences that only Krishna has. And that's why this verse is important.
Okay.
I've read this verse many times, but I don't know what was the Sanskrit for it. So it's from Vishnu Puran 6547. Should I read the verse?
Please do.
Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasa Shriyaha jnana vairagya yos chaiva sannam bhaga itingana. Full wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These are the six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Thank you very much. Good to memorize that verse. It's a really important verse. Summum bonum. Microphone. Krishna is the summum bonum. And what is the summum bonum?
The greatest or supreme good.
Say more. Where does it come from?
Doesn't say.
It dead that's ends right there, that's it?
Yeah.
Nothing at the bottom?
No.
How disappointing. Okay, Krishna says samam bonam. Okay. All other demigods have the same attributes in less quantity. You got the nectar devotion? There's no nectar devotion? It's like the end of the world.
So it says L-A-T in the... So is it Latin? Does someone...
Yes. Correct. It is Latin. It doesn't tell the origin of the word? Okay. The most perfect living beings is Brahma, the supreme administrator of one universe. He possesses 78% of the attributes in full. All other demigods have the same attributes in less quantity, whereas human beings possess the attributes in very minute quantity. So what are the attributes? Here. You got it? Here. You know the attributes, all the qualities of Krishna, all 64? How many do you know?
I know some which only Krishna has that others do not have.
You want to start with those?
Yes. He is very beautiful. He is the most beautiful. And that's one. He plays flute. And when he plays flute, he enchants everyone by playing flute. Second one. Third one is... he is always surrounded by his loving devotees. And the fourth one is he is a wonderful performer of loving pastimes.
Very good. Okay, here they are in full, the qualities of Sri Krishna. Are you ready? Beautiful bodily features, auspicious characteristics, pleasing. Stop me if you want to hear any of these. Effulgent, strong, ever youthful, wonderful linguist, truthful, pleasing talker, fluent, highly learned, highly intelligent, genius, artistic, clever, expert, grateful, determined, expert judge of time and circumstances, seer by the authority of the scriptures, pure, self-controlled, steadfast, forbearing, forgiving, grave, self-satisfied, possessing equilibrium, magnanimous, religious, heroic, compassionate, respectful, gentle, liberal, shy, protector of surrendered souls, happy, well-wisher of his devotees, controlled by love, all auspicious, most powerful, all famous, popular, partiality to devotees, very attractive to all women, all worshipable, all opulent, all honorable, the supreme controller, changeless, all cognizant, ever fresh, Sakchidananda Vigraha, possessing all mystic perfections, Krishna's inconceivable potencies. Krishna's body generates innumerable universes, the original source of all incarnations. Krishna gives salvation to the enemies that he kills, the attractor of liberated souls, performer of wonderful activities. Krishna is surrounded by loving devotees, Krishna's attractive flute, Krishna's exquisite beauty. Which one do you want to hear? By the way, I'm going to teach you something before we do this. Hari Krishna. Hari. Right hand over left. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So if you need to sign... Hare Krishna, Hari Bo, Advaita Acharya, Srivas Thakur, Vrindavan. I learned some signing, and I got a book all about transcendental signing. And I'll tell you one thing that will inspire all of you, Vrindavan, and that is that I went on Sankirtan with a deaf and dumb devotee. And it was his first time on Sankirtan, and he distributed 15 books on one of the toughest streets I've ever been on. And he's so enthusiastic. He's preaching like wildfire to all the deaf and dumb people all over England. Like fire he preaches. He wrote his own book, and he's teaching them all how to speak Krishna Katha. There weren't a lot of these things weren't in the vocabulary of deaf and dumb people until he invented them. Advaita Acharya. Vrindavan. So I'll bring the book in. You can all see it so you can learn a little signing. And I think we should have some deaf and dumb book distribution going on here. It'll be one of our marathons. No talking the whole month. Okay, what do you want to hear? Yes.
Did he tell the sign for you?
What's
what
that?
Signs to make for you, for Vaisheshika Prabhu?
No, he didn't say. Which of Krishna's qualities would you like to hear more about? Which one?
Can we do gratefulness?
Grateful, yes. Krishna is grateful. Let's hear how grateful Krishna is. Popular, most powerful. Which one is it? Number 17. Krishna is grateful. Now, we're talking about how the Krishna is the origin of everything, because we heard this in Akura's prayers. He said Krishna is the supreme cause of all causes and the origin of everything. And that brought us to the point where Krishna has all qualities. So all qualities come from Krishna. Where have we seen any quality? It came originally from Krishna. And this is the quality of gratefulness that originates in Krishna. Any person who is conscious of his friend's beneficent activities and never forgets his service is called grateful. In the Mahabharata, Krishna says, "When I was away from Draupadi, she cried with the words, 'Hey Govinda, this call for me has put me in her debt, and that indebtedness is gradually increasing in my heart.'" Everyone please say, "Hey Govinda."
Hey Govinda.
But a little stronger. Hey Govinda. We'll just do that spontaneously every once in a while. "This call has put me in her debt, and that indebtedness is gradually increasing in my heart." This statement by Krishna gives evidence of how one can please the Supreme simply by addressing him, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda."
Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. Hey
Krishna. The Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is also simply an address to the Lord and his energy. So to anyone who is constantly engaged in addressing the Lord and his energy, we can imagine how much the Supreme Lord is obliged. It is impossible for the Lord to ever forget such a devotee. It is clearly stated in this verse that anyone who addresses the Lord immediately attracts the attention of the Lord, who always remains obliged to him. So what to speak when you go out on Sankirtan and you meet somebody who's never chanted the Maha Mantra, and you teach that person to chant the Maha Mantra, and Krishna hears it, and he becomes obligated to that person and indebted, feels indebted just because he said the name. What to speak of the person who induced him to say the name? Give mercy, you get mercy. Another instance of Krishna's feeling of obligation is stated in connection with his dealings with Jambavan. When the Lord was present as Lord Ramachandra, Jambavan, the great king of the monkeys, rendered very faithful service to him. When the Lord again appeared as Lord Krishna, he married Jambavan's daughter and paid him all the respect that is usually given to superiors. Any honest person is obliged to his friend if some service has been rendered unto him. Since Krishna is the supreme honest personality, how can he forget an obligation to his servitor? Krishna is grateful. What other quality do you want to hear? Attractor of liberated souls. What number is that? Do you have it? We have protector of liberated souls. All auspicious, most powerful. Popular, all famous. Very attractive to all women, all honorable, all awesome. There's protector of liberated souls. 47? 37? Is there attractor of liberated souls? Okay, after this, I'm putting in one. I want to hear wonderful linguist, because that goes towards our language project. Okay, protector of surrendered souls. That's as close as I can get you. But we will talk about how he attracts liberated souls also. In 37, Krishna is the protector of all surrendered souls. Some enemy of Krishna's was enlivened with the thought that he needn't fear Krishna, because if he simply surrendered unto him, Krishna would give him all protection. Krishna is sometimes compared to the moon, which does not hesitate to distribute its soothing rays, even on the houses of the Chandalas and other untouchables. Now, since you brought it up, you said Krishna is attractive even to the liberated souls. So why don't you give us a commentary on that? You can prove it through the Shastra. Go ahead, give him the mic. How is Krishna attractive to liberated souls?
Because Krishna is all attractive, and once a soul is liberated, they will no longer be on the material platform, and they'll be attracted to the highest cause.
Prove it. Prove it through Bhagavatam. Tell us two incidences of liberated souls, or as a hint, clue, two into five, who were attracted to Krishna even though they were completely liberated. We'll give him a shot first, and then Malini's ready. Go ahead. I gave it away. Two incidences with five personalities involved. Go ahead.
Guruji, the verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam, page number 176 in Shloka book.
176 in your Shloka book, for those who are keeping score at home. Go ahead.
Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto 7, chapter verse number 10. Suta uvacha atmaramascha munayo nirgrantha apyurukrame kurvanti ahitukim bhaktim ittam bhuta guno harihi. All the different varieties of atmaramas, those who take pleasure in the atma or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though free from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including the liberated souls.
You know that verse? You should learn that verse. Make that your life and soul. Memorize it. Bring it around. That verse is very important. Atmaramascha munayo nigrantha apyurukrame. Who talked about that verse ad infinitum? Who else described the verse? Who else gave, besides Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who else talked about the Atmarama verse? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? Okay, so the Atmarama verse proves that Krishna is the topmost because his qualities are transcendental. Because liberated souls who are beyond the three modes of material nature become attracted to him. So Shukadev Goswami is a good example, right? He was completely liberated even from birth. How do we know this? How do you know Shukadev Goswami was liberated? Can you tell by his actions? What were his actions?
First of all, he didn't want to come out of his mother's womb.
Took him a while, right?
It took him a while.
How long?
It took him 16 years.
That's a long time. Okay. Then what did he do?
And as soon as he came out, he started running away from the home.
Yeah, he didn't want anything to do with family life.
He headed for the forest.
Where does it say that family life is the source of bondage in the material world? It says in the fifth canto, Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavamitam Tayomito Hridaya Grantamahu, Ato Griyakshetra Sutapta Vitar Janasi Mohu Yamahamamiti. When a man and woman come together, then they produce offspring, and then they have to go to Home Depot to keep the whole thing going. And that's the whole story of the material world. So, where's a verse in the Shastra? Is there a verse in the Shastra that says that one can live in family life and be completely liberated at the same time, that liberated souls live in family life without being disturbed by it? Did the residents of Vrindavan and Vraja, did they have families? Are they completely liberated souls? Do they all have families? Do they have kids? Do they have cows? Do they have pets? Do they have pots and pans? So one can be in a family and at the same time be completely liberated, right? I gave you this verse before. It's from the 10th canto, 14th chapter of the Bhagavatam. And it says, it's not in your shloka book, but it says that until one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then all one's house is like a prison. All one's family relations is like foot shackles. Until one becomes a devotee of Krishna. So if you become a devotee of Krishna and use everything in Krishna's service, then all these things become transcendentalized. And where were we? You were.
Yeah, we were talking about
Atmarama verse. Go ahead.
So we were talking about the Shukdev Goswami and
yes,
how so he went away from his home after he was born immediately, and his father Vasudev wanted him back, but Shukdev Goswami anyway started going away, and his I think Vasudev sent another person to go and recite this verse before him. And the verse is, I don't remember the verse, but I only remember the first part. Aho, it starts with Aho Bakim, something like that. But it the translation is, who can be more merciful than Krishna, who gave liberation to Putana, who came to him to kill him? And after hearing that verse, he immediately he was immediately attracted to Krishna, and he wanted to learn Srimad Bhagavatam, and he came back and he learned Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, and he became a great devotee.
Okay, that's big news. And who else was attracted to the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though they were totally self-liberated?
The four Kumaras.
The four Kumaras. Do you know this? The four Kumaras were completely liberated, had no interest in the material world. They were completely equal to everyone. But when they went to Vaikuntha, what particular sensual experience did they have in the spiritual world that attracted them to the personality of Godhead? Incorrect.
They smelled the fragrance of Tulasi.
It could have been Tulsi incense. The fragrance of the Tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, that is all attractive. I have to admit, I came home the other day from a long flight, a 10-hour flight, sitting in a fuselage, not one of my favorite things in life. And I came home, and Nirkula had just done puja and worshipped the deities, and there was incense coming out of the house. And as soon as I got to the front door, I felt like I had hit the spiritual world. My mind changed, but I came alive again. It's like it was as if I was a new ager, I'd say it was aromatherapy had cured my jet lag, and I immediately felt enlivened. So what to speak of curing jet lag? By just smelling the lotus feet of the Lord, the Tulsi leaves and the fragrance that comes from his body, then a person who's unattracted to the material world becomes attracted to the spiritual world. Yet pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhaktya karmashayam gratitam udgartayanti santa. tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha shrotoganas tamaranam bhajavasudeva. This is an important verse. You should look it up. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhaktya. Shloka book. Please look it up. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasa bhaktya. Karmashayam gratitam. Let's see who's faster. Damodar on his iPhone 217. The books win again. I hope they don't go out of existence very soon. 217. Look at this verse. It shows that actually those who are yogis and who try to control their senses by the power of pranayama, by the power of meditation, may not be successful because shrotoganas tamaranam. There are great waves of material nature that can come and distract our attention, right? Where does Krishna say that in the Bhagavad Gita? That even a man of intelligence can be diverted from the path of meditation if he concentrates on one of the senses, one of the sense objects that can draw away his meditation. Even a man of discrimination, even highly learned people, even highly elevated yogis can be swept away by the senses. They're so powerful. So we shouldn't think that the senses, they can't touch me, that I'm okay, right? We shouldn't think like that because even people of great discrimination can be dissuaded by the, can be misled, can be led astray by the senses. Malini? Are you in the shloka book? You're in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Let's look what Krishna says. So let's take this as a warning. Here's one of the great secrets of devotional service, and that is to always be on guard. Never let your guard down and think that I'm okay, that I've got this down. I got it covered. I'm on the topmost platform, and I can just look at whatever I want to or hear whatever I want to. And here's the proof. Where is it, Malini? Bhagavad Gita, page 133. Text 60, that's 260. Yatato yapikonteya, please repeat. Purushasya vipaschitaha. Indriyani pramatini. Haranti prasabhambanaha. Yatataha. While endeavoring. He certainly, api, in spite of, kaunteya, O son of Kunti, purushasya, of a man, vipaschitaha, full of discriminating knowledge, indriyani, the senses, pramatini, agitating, haranti, throw, prasabham, by force, manaha, the mind. Translation, the senses are so strong and impetuous. Look up the word impetuous in the dictionary, please. O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. I'll say, please repeat. The senses are so strong and impetuous. O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Purport. There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishwamrita, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment. Although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice. And of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot see such material engagements. A practical example is given by Sri Jamunacharya, a great saint and devotee, who says, Yadavari mama cheta krishna patara vinde navanavarasa dham yudyatam rantum asit tad avari patanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishtivanam nishtivanam cha. Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor. Whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I spit at the thought. Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious edibles. Maharaj Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Durvas Muni, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo vachamsi vaikunta gunarnu varnane. Okay, so that this verse is a good verse to keep as a placeholder whenever the mind plays the trick that you've done enough for this lifetime, you've done enough for today. Maya is not that powerful. She can't affect you. You're an ISKCON. You're protected. You're a great yogi. You're initiated. You're what else?
Twice initiated.
Twice initiated. Maya can't touch you. Big mistake. Always be afraid of Maya. Be very afraid constantly take shelter of Krishna, because even a person, vipaschitaha, who's extremely discriminating and is full of knowledge, can be dissuaded by Maya. But the indication in this verse is that if a person, actually it's not indicated in this verse, it's indicated in the purport, that if a person has a superior taste in Krishna consciousness, which we mentioned, yet pada pankaja palasha vilasya bhakta, that means from the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord, if one's attracted to the features of Krishna, they're so attractive that they can untie the great knot in the heart that binds me to this material world. That means, yet pada pankacha palasha vilasya bhakta, there's so much enjoyment there in the spiritual world and in the pastimes of Krishna, yet pada pankacha. Yet pada pankaja, doesn't that sound nice? Yet pada pankaja palasha vilasa bhaktya. Karmashayam gratitam. There's a karmashaya gratitam. There's a granti, there's a hard knot that's in the heart. And it comes from years and years of enjoying the material world. And so by coming in contact with Krishna and the qualities of Krishna, which are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're finding this out because you gave us this thread about how a liberated person is even attracted to the qualities of Krishna. And we heard the Atmarama verse, right? And because the Srimad Bhagavatam attracted Shukadeva Goswami, it's the same quality as Krishna. Krishna swadamo pagate dharma ganadi bisaha kalo nashta dushameshar purnaranarko denodita. It's an incarnation of Krishna. All the qualities of Krishna are there. And by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, one's mind can become attracted to Krishna. And one can surpass the enjoyments in the material world and even of the liberated state. And that knot in the heart, karmashaya grantita, the granti, the hard knot in the heart, can be cut by this attraction to Krishna. So all this can be attained by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. By hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, can anybody prove that from the 34 verses in the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the hard knot in the heart is cut by the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? Because if we can prove that, I think that we've finally found the solution and to attaining the highest perfection in life from whatever position we're in now. And I think that's a major breakthrough. What do you think? If we can prove this now, I think we've made a revolutionary discovery that's worth going out and telling everybody about. Yes, go ahead. Can you prove it?
This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, and verse number 18. Nasta praye shvabhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama sloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Translation: by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact.
Okay, you didn't get us there, though. It says almost, and I wanted it cut. Okay, he's giving us another one in the back. Go ahead. You need the microphone, though. It's good, Ramana Nisaka. You started us off, but we're not all the way there because it said it's almost destroyed. We want it completely destroyed and cut. Let's hear it. Go ahead, Damodar.
Shintam Swata Krishna, Punya Sharana Kirtana, Hide Antos
Abhadrani
Suhatsatam.
Suhatsatam, go ahead and tell us the meaning.
By regular chanting of the of recitation of the Bhagavatam, the knot is the heart, the knot is opened, something
Lord
like that.
Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma Super Soul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which turn themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. But you didn't quite. We're on the path. We're hot on the trail, but the knot is not cut yet. We want the knot cut, and Rakshit Jariwala, the pundit in the front row, I think has got it.
Well, I'm going to attempt to do
something. Cut the knot.
But the verse that Ramananda Saka cited, a couple of verses that follow that continue this sequence. So, tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobha dayaschaye Cheta iter anavidam stitham satve prasidati. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.19, page 165, Shloka book. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy.
Keep going.
And then you continue with SB 1220.
Haribo.
Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavad tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. And finally, SB 1221, Vidyate Ridaya Granthis Chidyante Sarva Samsaya Shiyante Chasya Karmani Drishtra Evat Manishvare. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced.
Got it.
And all misgivings are cut to pieces.
Yes.
The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self has master.
Beautiful. Beautiful, everyone. Congratulations. So we found it. This is the secret. And this is starting off with hearing and chanting about Krishna, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, this literature which has the exact same quality as Krishna. It is Krishna. It's the personality of Godhead incarnated in the form of this book. And by hearing this book, you hear the qualities of Krishna, and gradually it clears the dirty things from the heart, and Krishna helps sort them out. He's there as the Suhrit. He's the well-wisher. He's also attracted to the sound of the Bhagavatam. It's about him. It's about his internal energy. It's about his intimate pastimes. And then he sorts everything out. Scientifically, one rises above the modes of material nature and comes to know scientifically the personality of God, and it becomes happy. And eventually, bidyate riya grantish chidyante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishta evat manishvare. The knot in the heart is pierced, and all one's misgivings are cut to pieces. So this knot in the heart is cut by this process of associating with the Srimad Bhagavatam, personality of Godhead. And yet, I was on this verse still going over and over again. It's in your shloka book. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasa bhaktya.
karmashayam gratitam utgartayanti santa. So that means that the santas, the devotees, they can untie the knot of material existence that's there within the heart. It's in the heart. There's no enemy in this world except for the uncontrolled mind and senses. It's my own entanglement in this world that causes my difficulty. I must untangle my own heart through this process of association with the Srimad Bhagavatam and with the person Bhagavatam. There's book Bhagavat and person Bhagavat, and I need the association of both. And by that association, the knot in the heart becomes pierced and untied. So, yet pada pankacha palasha vilasa bhakta, because there's so much enjoyment in the lotus feet of Krishna, in his pastimes, in his qualities, the devotee becomes entangled in the spiritual world. It's not good enough to become unentangled from the material world. We have to actually become entangled in the spiritual world. We don't just leave it at zero. We want to become caught up in the spiritual world. As much as a materialistic person is caught up in what do people get caught up in this world? Have you ever seen anybody caught up in the activities of the material world? What are some things people get caught up in? Stocks. Do people get absorbed in stocks and watching the stock market? How much do they get caught up? Do they jump off buildings when the stocks go down? Yes, they do. It's happened many, many times before. Where else do they get caught up? Facebook. Definitely Facebook. I saw a little cartoon of a young devotee woman getting initiated. It was just a cartoon, and the spiritual master was handing over the beads and saying, recite the four regular principles. She's saying the four regular principles, and then she looked all like kind of smug, like, okay, no problem. And then he goes, and no Facebook. And all of a sudden, she looked completely morose. Okay, what else? Entanglement in the material world. Internet, yeah.
Games.
Job, games. Games like what? Baseball?
Video games.
Video games. How about drugs, intoxication? People give their whole life away for these things. It can become completely entangled. So in the same way that a materialistic person becomes entangled in the material world, for our safety, we must become entangled in the spiritual world. What are some ways to become entangled in the spiritual world? I'm talking about, addicted to it, addicted to spiritual activities so that you don't even want to hear what anybody else has to say. You know, when somebody's addicted to material activities, they don't want to be bothered. They'll cheat, they'll lie, they'll steal, they'll do anything just to keep their addiction. So we have to become like that in the spiritual sense. So entangled, so addicted to spiritual activity that we don't care what anybody says, even if they try to talk, we'll just be right back in there. What is it you were going to say?
About intoxication and addiction, I just wanted to share something from last Saturday's book distribution effort. We had, the last week was a very long week for everybody because we had multiple sessions visiting Swamis and, programs at people's houses and things like that. And it was Saturday, so I could see that Sri Krishna Purushottam Prabhu was visibly exhausted. He was visibly exhausted, And so I constantly kept on telling him that, Purushottam Prabhu, we are going to meet the book targets. Let's not do book distribution today. And then he turned and said, Mataji, we have to do I'm addicted.
Good. That's a good sign. Yeah, this is a sign. There's a verse that I have on a card, and I'm not sure where it's from, but someone gave it to me a while back that says, just as, you know this one? You don't even know what it is. Just as a miser counts and recounts his coins and is always looking to see the bank account, he keeps refreshing the screen over and over again, did it go up? And just as a miser is counting, recounting his coins over and over again, so similarly, the devotee is counting and recounting the verses and going back over them, seeing how many he has and getting more, collecting them more, and that kind of obsession. The Padyavali has a lot of verses like this. We've mentioned before, of course, the classic one, yuvatinam yuta yuni yunam cha yuvatau yuta Mano biramate tadvan manome ramatam twayi. That just as the minds of young boys are attracted to young girls and young girls are attracted to young boys, he's praying, let my mind be similarly attracted to you. So we're talking about the reflection is in the material world, and I become inexplicably caught up and addicted to these material activities over and over again. It becomes habitual. So through my practice of sadhana bhakti, which means to come keep myself constantly in touch with these stimuli which will awaken my natural love for Krishna, then after a while, coming to the safe side, I become addicted to those activities. You were going to say?
I just had a question, Prabhuji. Rakshit Prabhu just talked about the verse and he said about the knot. So is this the knot we're talking about is knot of attachment to the material world?
Yes.
Okay. And then the knot that, what does the shloka?
Asanga shastrena dridhena chitvan. One must, it's sometimes called a knot, sometimes it's called a deeply rooted tree, whatever you want to talk about. It's a narta. It's a kind of false value. And I've become attached to it inexplicably, yes.
Yeah. So is there a shloka which talks about being like the knot thing in the spiritual world?
What's that?
Like to be attached to the spiritual world. I'm sorry, I didn't get the second part. So did he
also become entangled in the spiritual world?
Yeah.
And you're looking for some verses like that?
Yeah, so I was just thinking that if he was talking about that too.
Well, there is, as I was saying, in the Padyavali, there's a series of verses that talk about how just as one's attached in the material world, one should be attached in the spiritual sense. And one I've also given in this class, Rupa Goswami says that just as the lover is waiting for a love letter, I mean, what does a lover do when he or she is waiting for a love letter? Check the mailbox 50 times a day, and even though it's a Sunday, right? And when it finally shows up, you know, they're walking around, they're doing their work, but They're completely absent-minded except for thinking of that letter coming. When's it going to come? When's it going to come? When's it going to come? Finally comes. The man takes the letter out and his hands are shaking. And then he opens the letter with the greatest anticipation. He can barely breathe. And he reads that letter from the lover and his voice is quivering and he's perspiring. So in the same way, Rupa Goswami says, may I read the Srimad Bhagavatam with this same feeling, like that. So this is the science of Krishna consciousness actually means it's a transference of that same attachment. Narada Muni says this: the thorn takes out a thorn. The same attachment that's there in the material world, we simply transfer into the attachment and entanglement in the spiritual world. It's a very entangling thing to be attached to Krishna. In the most advanced stages, we find the devotees, like the gopis, are talking about, they're trying to forget Krishna. In the neophyte stage, one's doing everything he or she can to remember Krishna 24 hours a day and struggling to do that, even for a few minutes, chanting 16 rounds and struggling to remember one mantra. And the gopis are so entangled in Krishna and his pastimes, they're trying to forget him, and they can't. So we're talking about Krishna's the origin of everything. We gave all kinds of evidence from various scriptures. Yes, and we have a definition of impetuous, because the senses are impetuous, right? A microphone? Krishna says the senses are so strong and impetuous. What does impetuous mean?
So it's an adjective characterized by sudden energy, action, or emotion, impulsive, and impetuous decision he will come to regret. That's the example.
Good to know. The senses are strong and impetuous, which means given to sudden energy. So you could be just, you know, perfectly, everything's fine, and all of a sudden, peanut butter. What? Who said that? You know, I want peanut butter now, and if I don't have it, I'll die. That's the senses, right?
And the another meaning is having or marked by violent force.
By violent force. The violent force. Yeah, look at anger. Anger is such a violent force that perfectly normal, sensible people can all of a sudden commit a crime of passion. Can run somebody off the road or say something that will, you know, jeopardize their job forever. They'll be kicked out and defamed because they said something out of anger. So the senses are so strong and impetuous, Krishna says, that even a man of discrimination who's endeavoring to control them can be overcome by the senses. So the remedy, what we're hearing, is first of all, the gradual process of hearing about Krishna, it releases that knot. It gets rid of the anartas within the heart, like lust, anger, greed, which are tormentors. They actually torment us. They're called the durnideshas. They're the bad masters that are actually abusing us. In one place, Shankaracharya calls them the highwaymen of my senses. Have you ever been accosted by a highwayman? That means like a robber on the road. It's really a horrible experience. Sometimes in around Mathura, some people are driving at night. You know, some rascals will put a log across the road and then attack the car and take all the stuff. But he talks about how the highwaymen of my senses have grabbed me and thrown me into, taken all my riches and thrown me into a well. And there I'm helpless inside that well. So the uncontrolled senses are like highway robbers that take away all my opulence, all my spiritual knowledge. Jayato vishayan pumsam sangas teshu bajayate. And if I give way to them, they'll take me all the way downtown. You just give a little bit of leeway and they take you all the way downtown and that's it. So we have to be vigilant. And beyond being vigilant, we also have to become very much attached to our service and the transcendental service, especially the process of hearing and chanting. We should always be absorbed in hearing and chanting 24 hours a day. Is that fanatical to say that? How can we prove that that's an accurate statement? Which of our acharyas has said we should be fully absorbed 24 hours a day in hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna? Nectar of instruction, who's got the verse on the tip of their tongue? Besides Pandichi in the back, yeah.
Not the verse, but I'm going to say something about translation. The essence of all advice is that one should organize his life 24 hours a day in nicely hearing, chanting, and doing other devotional services to the Lord.
And where does that put you? According to that verse, if you keep doing that, where do you end up?
In this way, one should reside in a holy dham, such as Vrindavana, and execute his devotional service. And then he talks about Radhakund.
And following in the footsteps of one of the beloved devotees, yes, of the Lord, right? So I like this Bhakti Shastri. Your students are full of shlokas and knowledge. So this verse, Tannamarupa, it's number 8. It's the big number 8 in the Nectar of Instruction, Tannamarupa Charita Adi. Charita Adi. So all these devotional practices, Tannamarupa Charitari Sukirtananu, Smrityo Kramena Rasana Manasinioja, Tishtan Vraje Tanaranaragi Jananugami, Kalam Nayed Akilamiti Upadesha Saram. Rupa Goswami gives us the essence of all advice. Akila Saram. Essence of all advice is that one should 24 hours a day hear, chant, remember the transcendental names, pastimes of the Lord, form of the Lord. And that way one will come to reside in Sri Vrindavan Dham and follow in the footsteps of one of the Lord's beloved associates there. So this process of Krishna consciousness, beginning with hearing and chanting, will cleanse the heart. It will actually bring us to Vrindavan. We'll be able to live in Vrindavan by this process of hearing and chanting the transcendental sound. So that's the business of advanced devotees, is regulating the life around this process of hearing and chanting. Srinivasacharya said it about the six Goswamis who are our main acharyas. And what did he say that they did? Who knows what Srinivasacharya said about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan and how they regulated themselves to hear a chant and remember Krishna. Do you know where it is? Srivas is holding back there. Go ahead. It's Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi.
Kala Vasani Krutav Nidra Hara Vihara Kadi Vichitav Kyaktianta Dino Chayo Gopi Bhava Rasamri Dabdiladri Kalola Magno Muhur Vande Rupa Sanatana.
This is a big clue. Thank you, Srivas Prabhu. This is a big clue of how to become entangled in the spiritual world. Look at this. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi. Shraddha's onto something. She's smiling really big back there. What do you got? She's in ecstasy. Okay. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi. Kalavasani Krito. Listen to this. It's talking about how they, every day, this is their work. Just like some CEOs, they don't have time for anything else. They're, if you ask them for a meeting, they'll give you 10 seconds. In fact, I know this. There's this great devotee in New Delhi who's one of the biggest book distributors of all time in history. His name's Rakesh Oberoi. You know Rakesh Oberoi? Rakesh Oberoi, I went and interviewed him. That's why I wrote that little piece about how to do corporate sankirtan. He told me that he looks in the trades. Damodar's ears are perking up. He looks in the trades and finds out he only looks at billionaires in Delhi. And he looks at the trades and he finds out which of the billionaires, which of their businesses are doing well at the time. And then he writes down a list of them and he starts making appointments with them. It's not easy to get an appointment with a billionaire, but he keeps trying until he gets their secretary or somebody to give him even like 30 seconds, 30-second meeting. So he told me when he goes into the meeting and they ask him, will you take something? Because, you know, out of politeness, they offer him something. And he says, I like warm water because they don't have warm water ready. It's the last thing they're going to expect. So they have to go in the back room and it takes them a few minutes to get warm water. It gives them a couple extra minutes to talk to this rich guy and start making an inroad into it. So, you know, Prabhupada points this out. He said, very wealthy people, they don't have any time because they're so absorbed in making money. And then the next business deal and everything, they can't spare any time. And anyway, the Goswamis were like that, but they're entangled in the spiritual world. In the material world, you know, the people who are really in the mode of passion, I'm not talking about mode of ignorance, working people, but I'm talking about mode of passion. They really want to get ahead and they really want to show that they're the top guy. And even though they have billions of dollars, they're still expanding and they're waking up earlier than everyone. They're working out, staying fit, everything so they can have an edge in the marketplace and get more market share to edge everybody else out. This is the material entanglement. In the spiritual world, the same thing, but on the spiritual side. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi Kalavasani Krito. They didn't have time for anything else because all their activities were regulated around this hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, doing these devotional activities. And they counted it. I mean, it counts and it hurts when you don't get your that extra thing in. Sankhya, Purva, Kanama, Gana, Natibis, hearing, chanting, remembering, dancing, singing, offering obeisances, all the devotional activities. They're counting them. Sankhya Purva Kadama Gana Natibi Kalavasani Krito Nidrahara Vihara Kari Vijito Chatyanta Dino Cheyo. They don't have time anymore. You got to get some rest. I don't have time to get rest. I've got rounds to do. Haridas Thakur didn't sleep. And when the prostitute came to him, he said, sure, sure, no problem. I'll take care of you, but just later after I finish my rounds. And he was so addicted to his rounds that he had no even intention or inclination whatsoever of even like entertaining a prostitute in the dead of night all alone. And so this is the process that the Goswami showed us to become absorbed like this in the in doing our service, absorbed in our devotional service. We have to become addicted to our seva. Your seva will save you. So you become addicted to your seva. Yes.
Yeah,
Sankhya Purva Kanama Gana Natibi Kalav. It's verse number 6 in the Shad Goswami Ashtakam. Sing that one every day, Shad Goswami Ashtakam, because it gives you great strength for Sankirtan. If you want to be empowered for Sankirtan, sing the Shad Goswami Ashtakam every day. It's a beautiful, beautiful Ashtakam. Prabhupada said that. He told all the sannyasis, he said, you should chant this every day. It'll empower you for Sankirtan, for preaching. The Goswamis will personally empower you. Okay, where are we? You had a request?
You said you want to read the linguist.
Linguist, yeah, wonderful linguist. This is one of my favorite ones. The qualities of Krishna. He's a wonderful linguist. Which one is it? Highly learned, truthful, wonderful linguist is 7. 7th quality. Rupa Goswami says that a person who knows the languages of different countries, especially the Sanskrit language, which is spoken in the cities of the demigods, as well as other worldly languages, including those of the animals, is called a wonderful linguist. It appears from this statement that Krishna can also speak and understand the languages of the animals. When I was in Scotland, I was staying in the place where they raise all the Clydesdale horses. You know what those are? Those horses with the big furry legs, you know, and also Shetland ponies. Gita Priya would have loved it there. You know Shetland ponies? They're tiny little ponies with long hair. They're very cute. And anyway, one of the devotees I was talking to, this was in London, and he's from Scotland. He was an expert horseman before he joined. Now he's a brahmachari. And he was telling me how he trained for many years how to deal with horses and how to talk to them. You can talk to horses. And he was telling me about the top horseman in the world. And previously, for horses, they used to go out and they'd catch wild horses, which is no easy thing. And they'd bring them and they'd capture them and then they'd force them into these corrals. And then they'd tie their legs and then they'd beat them into submission until that we'd call it break a horse, until they'd finally give up their, you know, their wildness. And he said that was the way it was done for years, until this one man went off into the wild and he observed horses for a long time and he watched how they talk to each other and how they communicate and how they move. And then he came back and he started communicating with the horses. And without tying them up, without beating them or anything like that, he was able to convince them to come under his control and work for him rather than just being, you know, a wild horse. And so we were talking. That led to a verse in the 11th canto where Uddhava and Krishna are speaking. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. And he tells him about how controlling the mind is like controlling a horse, and how an expert horseman knows exactly how to communicate with the horse, with the reins. And he's not always pulling him in. He's sometimes letting him out a little bit, but he has a perfect communication so that the horse comes under control. He says that person has to, who's controlling the mind has to be like that. And so Krishna, I was just thinking, when a person develops those kind of qualities, even with like a horse, he becomes famous in human society. This is a famous person. They call them horse whisperers. And they just have a way with animals. I had a business colleague that I saw was expert with animals. And she could talk to any kind of animal practically. And she just had a way with him. But Krishna's like that. He can speak the language of every animal. He knows how to talk to all the animals. It appears from this statement that Krishna can also speak and understand the languages of the animals. An old woman in Vrindavan, present at the time of Krishna's pastimes, once stated in surprise, "How wonderful it is that Krishna, who owns the hearts of all the young girls of Rajabhumi, can nicely speak the language of Rajabhumi with the gopis. Well, in Sanskrit, he speaks with the demigods. And in the language of the animals, he can even speak with the cows and buffalo." Similarly, in the language of the Kashmir province, and with the parrots and other birds, as well as in most common languages, Krishna is so expressive. She inquired from the gopis as to how Krishna had become so expert in speaking so many different types of languages. Hari Krishna, Hari Bo, Vrindavan, Advaita Acharya, Srivas Thakur. We learned this. There's a deaf and dumb devotee that we met in England, who's an expert preacher, and he's written a whole book of transcendental sign language, and you're in it. Okay, so we started. We'll go back to where we started. You have a question.
So I don't have read. Probably it must be there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But I was just thinking. Once Nityananda Prabhu sent the message to Lord Gauranga that I think no one is buying from the marketplace.
Yeah.
And then the Lord understood the to wrap up the Leela from here. And so I was just thinking, one after the other, all the parshads of Lord Gauranga left this place. How did the six Goswami reacted to that? Like, I was just thinking, same thing how Srila Prabhupada's disciple would have felt when Srila Prabhupada left the planet. And I was just thinking that, now tomorrow this Bhaktivinoda Thakur MSA will kind of end, correct? How do we take it forward? How do we get inspiration when some big thing comes to an end?
Well, first of all, the mood of the devotees is expressed in the bhajan that we sing on the disappearance day of the great Vaishnavas, Yaya Nilo Prema Dana. And in that, a song, it's a lament all the way through. And the devotee said, I'll smash my head on the rock. I'll enter into fire. The devotee, when separated from the Vaishnav, feels like life's over. He might as well, jump off a cliff. It feels bereft. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, what's the greatest kind of suffering in this world? He said, I know of no other suffering except for the separation from a Vaishnav. That's the one thing that cannot be tolerated. And, devotees, even who were born just after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left, they missed his pastimes. They were lamenting at how unfortunate they were. And in that lamentation, that they're so unfortunate, they actually missed seeing Gauranga Mahaprabhu dance. They become connected to him. It's that mood. That's so in a way, just in another way, Prabhupada left in 1977. Say someone then came to Krishna consciousness in 1978. The way to actually be directly connected with Prabhupada is to have this feeling that I missed it. I'm so unfortunate that I wasn't able to be there. That's the Vaishnav feeling, that I'm so unfortunate I wasn't there. So devotees, in this separation, this is the highest feeling of connection. This is the highest method of connection to Krishna and his devotees, through separation. And Prabhupada says it in the Adi Leela, in the first chapter, in the 45th verse, and he said, in the absence of the spiritual master, that the spiritual master's instructions become one's life and soul. Even one instruction that one gets, and takes hold of, as one can become one's life and soul and direction in life, and it opens up a whole universe of service. Look at one instruction. What if, the spiritual master said, read my books. Then how does read my books, three words, and how you can structure your whole life around that. So, we have examples of all the Vaishnavas you know, and how what their reactions are. And, you know, for us, when we come to the end of one great endeavor, you know, now the next one starts. That's the fortunate thing for us, is that it's not over. It's just beginning. It's become even bigger than it was before. We're more entangled than we were before. I mean, 5 years ago when we started this whole thing, you know, and we were dabbling around and saying, we'll do a few here, a few there, start a few parties. And, you know, now we're running up to our necks. I'm afraid to tell you all, but we're really in this. I mean, there's no turning back now. We've dedicated so much to this. And we're really entangled. Don't you feel entangled, Dimitri, in your service now? He could barely work or anything like that. He's so busy now. He told me he's got two other projects lined up. And, you know, now, look at, you know, just from this last project for Bhaktivinod, the whole thing, getting the word out, the website, the brainstorming, the late night meetings, every single week and sometimes every day, the worrying when it was at 200 and we wondered, is it ever going to move? And it was moving by two a day, and I'd be refreshing my screen six times an hour, going, you know, when's it going to move? And then, you know, I'd be telling people, calling people, walking people, yeah, I'll try. And I was like, try? What are you talking about? Try? That's like an addict or something, you know. And everyone was like that. And in the meantime, you know, what's happened? Look, it's a big thing. It's a big deal. It's a new thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur revealed this. And now we have more responsibility, because now we have to figure, what are we going to do with it now? I mean, there's so many ideas. There's pages and pages of ideas for improvements. I mean, if you wanted to increase your staff of just technical help, you could do it. You could put 20, 30 people on this and take it to the moon. So it keeps expanding. So with great souls, you know, when they give us service like this, it keeps expanding, and we have the next thing to look forward to. It just keeps getting better, and we become more connected because of our, you know, we're connected by the service. And at the same time, you know, we feel separation. It's like when you're really attached to somebody, then even when they're in the same room, you can feel separation from them. Have you ever had that? I remember sitting in Vrindavan. I've said this before, but it was such a profound experience. I was sitting next to one of my godbrothers who I'm very close to and dependent on in so many ways. And sitting right after Mangalartik and Prabhu Samadhi and Vrindavan chanting, and I felt so fortunate to be there sitting next to my beloved godbrother. And all of a sudden, I just became overcome with separation from him, thinking, because I started thinking, how would I ever live without this person? And I'm chanting, and I was thinking, this is ridiculous. He's sitting right here. And I was feeling overwhelmed like that, out of separation. So there's all, you know, the spiritual world is a world of qualities and emotions and attachments and entanglement, complete entanglement. And that's what we're cultivating. That's what our sadhana is. It's coming closer to the devotees through didati pratigunati, through all the loving exchanges, and through loving exchanges with Krishna by offering him all kinds of things like flowers and scented oils. That's nice. You know, when you, in the morning, you know, you warm the water up so Krishna could have a warm bath, and you go out and pick some flowers and you grow the flowers yourself. And there's all these things that you can do that just become more and more entangling. And then it just becomes a life of entanglement in Krishna consciousness. And that's the loving network that Krishna has put out there for us, that's full of taste. Any other things? Yes.
This is somewhat unrelated, but many times this question came to me. And this is when we talk about four Kumaras or anyone who is already liberated and who has established in the concept of impersonal Brahman, and Here again, if they are in the consciousness of oneness with the Brahman, how is it that they can speak to some other person? Because they are already, they are already in oneness. That means the second one doesn't exist. So how is it that the second one exists while they are still in that condition?
Well, if you notice, Shukadev Goswami went off to the forest to be by himself. But those who are imitating that kind of thing, once when Prabhupada was talking to an impersonalist, it was far different, and not talking about Shukadev Goswami, I'm talking about a Mayavadi kind of person who's become affected by the modes of ignorance and have taken to this philosophy. But Prabhupada once was talking to a man, and Mayavad philosophy is very insidious. There's a lot of ways that it's very difficult to argue with because they keep changing the ground. But Prabhupada came to the point, Bhadra Narayan tells the story, says Prabhupada was sitting across from the man and said, if I say cotton ball or cotton shirt, is it the same? And the man kept talking. Prabhupada said, if I say cotton ball and cotton shirt, is it the same? And he still didn't answer. Prabhupada grabbed him by the shirt and he said, they say cotton ball, cotton shirt, is it the same? And the man said, oh, no, no. It's different. My point is that there's a practicality in this world. Lord Chaitanya said it to his mother once. He went up and sat on all the rejected pots. And afterwards, and when his mother came out and said, why are you sitting in that dirty place on the rejected pots? Lord Chaitanya said, well, what's the difference? And he also ate dirt. And he said to his mother, when she said, why did you eat dirt? He said that, what's the difference between sweetmeats and dirt? And she said, who has taught you this Mayavad philosophy? If you eat dirt, then you'll become sick and your body won't be able to digest. And if you eat sweetmeats, then you become happy. So there's a practicality to it. Mayavad, impersonalism doesn't really work. And Krishna says that, klesho dikartarastesham. There's a lot of suffering and difficulty in that path. And so it is hard to justify a lot of these things. But those who are, really detached from the modes of material nature, generally they don't interact so much. Those who are dedicated to that kind of a practice and lifestyle, they generally recluse themselves and, stay aloof. And, Prabhupada criticized that, sometimes people, they won't speak, but they'll write on a blackboard or something like that and communicate in that way. But what's the difference between speaking and writing on the blackboard and so on? It's an impractical thing to try to stay on that level. And either you become attracted by a devotee and become drawn towards the spiritual qualities, or aruya krishna param padam tata patantiyato nadrita yushmadam graya. If you're situated in that kind of impersonal conception, then you can become reattracted by the material qualities because the soul can't stay in that limbo, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. But I always thought it was funny. I read all kinds of books before I read Prabhupada's books, and so many of them were tinged with this idea. And I stopped talking for a while because I figured, what's the use? And then when there were prayers mentioned, I thought, like, who am I praying to? Because aren't I one with the Supreme? And it's hard to justify in so many ways. Rakshit Prabhu.
We come across, in the literature about this oneness concept. But isn't when oneness is really explained or defined, there is this distinction made that it is oneness in quality and not so much in quantity. That the Mayavadi concept is just merging. Whereas in our line of philosophy, they do point out that there is this oneness. One is like the Lord in quality, so they are one in that respect. whatever the spirit soul has, the super soul also has in quality, but that there is a distinction in quantity. So the concept of oneness is not oneness of everything, it's just oneness of a certain attribute. Isn't there?
Yeah. In Mayavad philosophy, the idea is that the individual soul merges and becomes one. That actually we are one already, but we just, because of Maya, we've forgotten. And as soon as that Maya is cleared, then we actually realize that we are that one supreme. And in Bhagavad Gita as it is, we understand natvaivaham jatunasam natvam nemi janadipaha. That Krishna says that all these warriors on the battlefield are individuals now. They've been individuals in the past, and they will be in the future. And when when Arjuna becomes liberated after hearing Krishna speak, and he says, "You know, now I've understood everything." He doesn't now. It doesn't mean there's one Krishna on the chariot, and that Arjuna disappears. There's still Arjuna, and there's still Krishna, but now Arjuna is one in purpose with Krishna. It's whatever Krishna says, then now that's my purpose in life. So we become one, not homogeneously merging, but out of love and out of purpose, we become one with the Supreme. And you notice that people who are one in purpose, they're still two people, but practically they're one entity. I mean, technically, when people get married in the Vedic culture, they become one purpose, one person, because then they have one purpose. And those who actually, you know, when you love somebody, then practically it's like the more you love somebody, the more one you become with them, the closer you are. So yes, we don't merge homogeneously. Okay, so we took a few drops from this ocean of transcendental knowledge that is somehow we have the good fortune of living near that ocean, and we can dip in there at any time. And it's a good idea to take that dip every day. Don't put it off, and don't reduce your chanting. Whatever you do, keep strong in your chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, because Krishna and his name are non-different, and our strength and our advancement will come naturally when we dedicate ourselves to properly hearing and chanting every day with attention. We should also beg to have some kind of inspiration every day. Don't go away empty-handed and think that mechanically I did it and therefore I'm done, although that's better than nothing. But it's better to consciously beg Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends this at the end of his bhajan, Udila Arana and Jeev Jago, that he said that you should beg for the holy name. And he said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has begged for the holy name and he has received it. So beg. Try to get something and do it every day. And read Bhagavad Gita every day, read Krishna book every day, chant some Ashtakams every day, Brahma Samhita, Srimad Bhagavatam, tell your boss, you're sick, you can't come in anymore. That's what Sanatan Goswami did. So we can follow in his footsteps at some point and go on hearing and chanting. And it's very much needed. Those who are educated in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and in the art of rendering service. I was just thinking about this after this trip. You know, everywhere I went, devotees are really eager to have expert devotees come and hear and you know, to speak to them about Krishna consciousness and also to take them out on Sankirtan. And I was just thinking that really that one of the next stages for our Sankirtan team is that devotees here should start going to different places and giving seminars and classes and taking the devotees out on Sankirtan. Is that all right? Fly to England and there's Africa and there's Australia and all over the world. So the point is, everyone has to become really expert and trained up, because that's what's most needed in the world. We have maybe, possibly, enough engineers. I'm not sure, but I'm thinking we might have enough engineers in the world already. But we don't have enough preachers, those who are fully trained and know the Bhagavad Gita, know the purpose behind the Gita, and know the Bhagavatam well, and know how to illuminate it and present it to others. So everyone should become like that to the best of their ability, learn how to speak Bhagavad Gita. And that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. He said, learn the Gita, learn the Bhagavatam, and become a guru. And go out and liberate everyone in the land. It's his order we're following. So we're taking that from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Man, woman, child, whoever you are, take this very, very seriously. Learn the key verses so that you can support it. And learn the logic behind it a little bit. Listen to Prabhupada's lectures. And then go out and give everyone an opportunity to take Krishna consciousness. For a temple, it's not how many we seat, it's how many we send. That's what counts. Not how many you seat, it's how many you send. Who cares if people sitting around all day? We want people to go out and spread Krishna consciousness to others. Go Premanande Aribo! Okay, so it's a big day here at ISV. Everyone can feel it. Tomorrow we're counting down the seconds until Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Divine Disappearance Day tomorrow. And devotees are feeling the spiritual energy from all of the service that you've done over the last 3 months, practically, working on this Bhaktivinoda Thakur Monthly Sankirtan Festival, isn't it? Hasn't it been nonstop for the last at least 3 months? When did we start really pouring on the steam? It was right after Nrisingadev? It was after Gaur Purnima. Right after Gaur Purnima, even during Ram Navami, we started talking about everything, and we were going to launch on April 15th, right? I think we finally launched the website in May sometime, and there's not been a moment of rest since that time, I don't think, for many of the devotees. So thank you very much. And tomorrow we're going to take it up here again at 5 o'clock p.m., and we'll be hearing and chanting and going all the way up until the wee hours of the night for Bhaktivinoda Thakur's disappearance day and the offering tomorrow. Hopefully we'll hit the goal by that time. Are we still inching towards it? Oh, all right. Cat's out of the bag. It's on the internet. We smashed the goal and we're sailing past it. It's unbelievable. It's incredible. Who knows where it's going to stop. Thank you to any of the devotees out there who are participating in the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Monthly Sankirtan Festival and have joined us for the broadcast tonight. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande.